You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
First off, thanks for having this conversation. I know we're going to take it in interesting places because I have a lot of questions. And as I was saying to Ben earlier, Kevin, I'm very bullish on crypto, but I want to play the role of a skeptic because everyone asks me questions all the time. And as you know, sometimes it's stressful figuring all this stuff out. And crypto is a complicated subject. We like to think it's simple, but Main Street world, it's not simple for the average person to use crypto. So anyway, let's go on with WonderFi. I'm a fan, but describe it to the listeners and I have tons of questions.
I think you're bang on. We're at a point where we haven't got full on mainstream adoption yet. And there's a few key issues that are keeping people out. So that's really what we're focused on at WonderFi. So I think there's two key issues. One is people are afraid of dealing with platforms that are going to get them in trouble or that could lose their money. So it's kind of the security and compliance side of things. And then the second is just how complex and fragmented the space is. So that means you're using many different wallets, accounts, passwords, platforms to achieve one or two things. And that just gets unwieldy. Even for people that are tech savvy, it's an absolute nightmare. So what we're doing with WonderFi is creating this unified access to digital assets in a compliant way. So that really means we've got centralized exchanges, so platforms that are similar to like a Coinbase or a Binance that are licensed, regulated currently by the Canadian regulators, but we're expanding it into many other jurisdictions. That gives people the peace of mind of not just retail, but also high net worth institutional, you know, investors and traders that they're dealing with a regulated entity. So we have those centralized platforms. We have a decentralized app, which focuses on DeFi, this high growth segment within crypto that more of the advanced side of the market is working within. And then we also touch on gaming and NFTs, which is another big area within digital assets. And so we're bringing all of those opportunities together under one banner, allowing people to access them with a single sign-on and giving people the confidence that they're dealing with compliant, regulated platform.
And Kevin, how did you two guys meet? How did you guys get involved?
We met through a mutual friend, I guess, when we were starting to explore increasing our operating company's portfolio to crypto. And we do that two ways. You know, we either buy the projects themselves and invest in something like Polygon or FTX or Circle. I have investments in all of those. And then, of course, I was very interested in decentralized wallets. But my premise of all of this and the challenge a lot of investors have is I'm already in the financial services industry. I have many different operating companies that are required to operate under a compliant mandate, both by the SEC, the OMF, the OSC. And so all of these companies are operating companies. And so there's no concept of rogue cowboy crypto for me. I don't have that option. I can't trade on rogue exchanges. I have to be 100% compliant. And most institutional investors don't own any crypto for the reasons I'm talking about. So what I found interesting when we met Ben and the team was that the whole mandate was around compliance and working with the regulator. So that was really refreshing because my thesis is the regulated exchanges are going to, in the long run, win the race because the banks are only going to operate with them. They're not going to work on platforms that aren't 100% compliant in the geographies they're in. So if you're in United Arab Emirates and you're the FAB bank, the largest bank in the Middle East, you don't touch crypto right now because you have to find someone that's compliant. Even though all your clients want it, they can't do it yet. Same with the Canadian banks. They'll eventually come on board here, but they're only going to do it with someone like a WonderFi because we're 100% compliant, whether it's a centralized or decentralized wallet. So that's the investment thesis and why I invested.
So I want to take it back one step further, because in order for them to touch crypto, any of these regulated banks or exchanges, they have to actually want to be involved in crypto. And you know, like the this is still a big question. Like the head of the Bank of England just said he can't see any intrinsic value in Bitcoin. And how would you respond to that? That's kind of the top level question, and then it gets, you know, I get more rarefied, but what do you respond to that? Like, where do you see the intrinsic value?
Well, let me answer it. I mean, that's an interesting opinion, but it's one person's opinion. I deal in a different universe. One of the businesses I operate is indexing. So we index for sovereign wealth funds, pension plans. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you're an oil-rich Middle East sovereign fund and you're running a $900 billion mandate. You're making $250 million a day. That's actually the United Arab Emirates. So they don't need more exposure to oil. So they go to the indexing industry, and I'm just one participant. There's many indexers. And they say, look, design an indice for us that is the S&P 500, less airlines, less oil. We don't want to own either of those. We own our own. We have our own airline. We own it. We have unlimited quantities of oil. So we don't need any more. So design indices. And so bottom line is, I asked them, what do you want to do on crypto? What index? And what they were doing for a while, they stopped doing it now, and I'll explain, is they said, we can't own crypto because the SEC hasn't ruled on it yet. And BlackRock hasn't ruled on it yet. And BlackRock's our largest manager. BlackRock is the largest money manager in the world and does most of the sovereign work outside of the indexing. And so what we will do is design us an index of US trading mining companies. And for a while, they traded in proxy with Bitcoin. So if your Marathon, Hut 8, Hive, we indexed all these things. And they would trade in exact proxy with the price of Bitcoin. It would go up, the stocks would go up, go down, they go down, because they were keeping all their coin on their balance sheet. And then the SEC order came out with a memo saying, we're gonna ask these companies to do carbon audits, because all of these Bitcoin miners are using carbon offsets, which everybody knows carbon credits are bullshit. So the SEC is calling their bluff on it. You can't say you own an acre of the Amazon forest and you're spewing out, you know, coal-generated electricity of Bitcoin mine and say you're clean. It doesn't work. So we had to unindex all those shares. And the reason I'm telling you this story is, in those dialogues, I started asking them, if you could own Bitcoin direct, how much would you take down? So a typical index, let's say you're running $100 billion, which is a really small fund for sovereign wealth. That's the smallest. There's 18 funds in the United Arab Emirates. That's the smallest. The largest is a trillion. So they said we would probably start at 75 basis points. 75 basis points of $100 billion is a shitload of Bitcoin. And once they put in the 75 basis point order, if it goes up, they sell it down to 75 bips. If it goes down, they buy it back up to 75 bips. They maintain their prorated position. That's what's missing in the entire crypto industry. Because once you get the allocation to the sovereign wealth, then there's always a bid. There's always a bid. There's always a market. There's either they're selling it or buying it, and you have liquidity and you get much less volatility. And so what we have now is a situation where, you know, people are saying, oh, Bitcoin's great. It's $800 billion. That is nothing, nothing. That's a rounding error. It's nothing. And the potential, and the reason I want to be an investor, is at some point in the next 2 to 3 years, the SEC will put policy out on Bitcoin, Ethereum, and stablecoins. And I know that because I was with Senator Lummis yesterday in Washington, and I looked at her bill. A lot of other private people are advising on her bill. Toomey had dinner with Daines last night in Washington, also putting forward a bill. These guys are moving forward. And so you want to be on the right side of this, because the minute it gets indexed with the real money, that's when Bitcoin goes to 100,000, 200,000, 300,000, whatever it's going to go, because the halving is in 2 years. So that's a lot of information that you may find interesting or not, but that's sort of my thinking on it.
Look, and I totally agree. I mean, there's not only the sovereign wealth funds, there's the cash reserves of the entire S&P 500, which is not in Bitcoin at all right now, but eventually some percentage of that will go into Bitcoin. So it's easy to kind of get to the numbers when you start throwing around facts like that. But what I'm interested in is crypto really is an evolution of currency and this notion of trustless currency. You don't have to trust any intermediary in the middle. The outcome's guaranteed. If I send you money, you'll get it. And there's not 16 banks in the middle and fees all around. And there's no central bank that's playing with the value of your money. You understand completely the economics of it. Is this enough to support it as not just an investment but as viable as either a store of value or a currency? Like what's your view on how this is an evolution of money?
Well, let's stick with stable coins for a moment, because that's already policy is already being proposed. So I agree with you on the payment system side. I'll give you a real use case. I do a lot of real estate investing and often in other geographies. And I won't mention the bank because I have a relationship with them, but we were closing a real estate transaction in our portfolio in a different country, in a different currency. And we sent millions and millions of dollars 4 days ahead, because usually, you know, an ACH transfer takes 36 hours. It's so inefficient. And they lost it. They lost it. They lost it for 24 hours. Now, first of all, that's unforgivable. But it also raises a bunch of questions. When it's, you know, $10,000, that's one thing. But when it's millions and there's interest involved for 48 hours, it's 48 hours actually, where's the money? Who pays the interest? So I actually called the board member on that bank and said, you know, have you ever heard of USDC? Because I would prefer to transfer USDC from your branch in Canada to the other countries, same bank. But there's the use case, as you suggested, that would have taken 2 seconds, fees would have been 100 times less, would have happened immediately, and I wouldn't have had to have done any FX, wouldn't have had to bought Swiss francs, could have just done it directly. So there's so much potential there that I really think that this whole thing will be the 12th sector of the S&P in about 10 years. And so if that's the case, I might as well invest now in the infrastructure. I mean, WonderFi is really an infrastructure deal. It doesn't care what the price of Bitcoin is or any other token. It has exchanges. All it cares about is trading, volatility. So I don't care if Bitcoin goes to 100,000 or goes down to 1,000. It doesn't matter to me, as long as it's being traded on one of the exchanges that WonderFi owns.
No, I agree. And one of the problems I see with crypto is that there really, and Ben, you were alluding to this also, there really are, it's too complicated. Like if you want to buy a handful of altcoins that you think are interesting, you might have to go to gate.io, you might have to go to Kraken, Binance, Coinbase, different wallets for different blockchains. You know, then which kind of cross-blockchain protocol do you use? It gets complicated. And I think it's sort of like when e-trading first started, like with E-Trade or Interactive Brokers or these early digital traders, people didn't really trust them, but they made it so easy, it became the norm for trading stocks. And I kind of think crypto is not going to be fully accepted by Main Street until it's easy. Like people ask me, should I have a wallet in a safety deposit box or on Coinbase? And I'd rather not keep all my holdings in a safety deposit box. What if, you know, that feels more scary to me than keeping it with a trusted institution, to be honest.
Yeah. I think the early adopters of crypto have a very different persona than the mainstream, and we're definitely seeing that. That's something that we honed in on and was the thesis of WonderFi when we started the company and continues to be. It's that the early adopters are people that are, you know, engineers. They have a, you know, trading experience. They have that sort of background and interest to really get into the weeds and use these multiple platforms, optimize, do all of these things that are more sort of advanced mechanisms and opportunities. mainstream users, the first thing that we found when we started canvassing people that were interested in crypto but had never opened an account was that they don't care about 95% of the stuff that people in, like, really in the crypto space care about. It's just like you talked about with E-Trade, it's more just focused around, can I trust this and is it simple enough for me to use it? If it's more than, you know, if it takes them more than 10, 15, 20 minutes to get onboarded or to understand what they're doing, like, your drop off of users is astronomical. So it really comes down to being able to make it a simple experience and then also help people understand why they need to care about this. Like, why, what's the reason to, you know, to be using one of these platforms in the first place. So there's still a lot of hurdles to overcome there. You know, again, that's where WonderFi really fits in. But I think what you'll see if you look at the market right now in terms of different platforms, there's a very clear distinction between platforms that are catering towards this advanced crypto trader and then platforms that are really trying to dumb it down and get more on the sort of mainstream knowledge and understanding so that they can bring more people into digital assets. Because the last point I'll say about it is, I think there is a big risk with digital assets, with crypto, that it becomes this insular asset class that only people that have a certain amount of knowledge or experience can access. And then that does away with the whole premise of what this has to offer, which is really democratizing finance. So it's a huge point and something that's really important to us.
So what do you guys see as tipping points? And, like, as an example, I'll take the internet again. People were uncomfortable putting their credit cards into the internet. And up to 2001, 2002, maybe even 2003, I would hear people saying, you know, oh, this internet thing is a fad. You know, same types of things people say about crypto right now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I would say 2005, the year the web had a billion users worldwide, that was kind of the tipping point, or one of the tipping points, where no one was saying this is a fad anymore. So what do you see as some of the tipping points for not just Bitcoin, but all of crypto?
I'll give a couple from my side, and I'm sure Kevin will have a couple. I do think getting to a milestone in terms of global users would just like you look at the internet, will be significant. On the way to that, it's definitely regulation and compliance. I think when you talk to your average person about crypto that doesn't have any, you know, background, the first things that come up are fraud, money laundering, scams. You know, those are the types of things that are sort of, you know, in the media, because obviously they get eyeballs, and there's obviously been some of that in the past. But what regulation solves, and when the securities regulators get involved, Canada, US, UK, Australia, all these jurisdictions that are in stable economies and are well respected, them laying the groundwork and framework for how to regulate digital assets, and it is really a big step in accepting these into the economy. And so that's a big step, and we're seeing that right now. Where WonderFi owns BitBuy, which was the first licensed Canadian crypto marketplace, actually the first in North America. And the Canadian regulators, the Ontario Securities Commission, has a very good reputation globally. So there's a lot of global regulators that are looking to what Canada has done to regulate and seeing how that's going to be able to follow suit. And then obviously everybody's looking at the US, and I know Kevin will have thoughts on that as he's been involved with various parties in those types of conversations. But as the US starts to indicate that they're going to regulate and that this is here, crypto is here to stay, everybody else across the globe is getting ready to follow suit. So as that starts to happen, you're going to start to see more acceptance and start to see, you know, usage continue to go up and become more diverse. So you're going to see a lot more retail come into the mix.
So again, outside of regulation, and I agree that's very important. Everybody wants to know it's safe. They're not going to get ripped off. That whole thing. What's other than number of users, because I agree also that's going to be a big tipping point. What would be a tipping point where now everybody says, "Oh, okay, I need some I need some crypto in my life, not just as an investment, but for X, Y, and Z. Like, mm-hmm. what are some tipping points there that you guys see?
I think it's going to happen with payment systems. You know, the Zelles and everything else that are being used now by banks are very, in my view, very inefficient, very slow, and very expensive. And when the regulation comes out on stable coins, and it looks very simple, it looks like it's going to be no different than a money market for Fidelity or Schwab. They're slightly different, but they're regulated, FDIC insured. I think the same thing's going to happen. Because we saw this big blow up on Luna, and that's algorithmic, and everybody's figured out that doesn't work. And the only one that didn't break a buck, even Tether broke a buck, but the one backed by the US dollar, USDC, stayed right through the chaos at a buck. And so there's others that also are going to be denominated by the dollar. But if that becomes, and you know, we use that in our operating company's payment system. However, because it's not regulated, our compliance department only allows us to treat it as an equity. So that means we can only have 5% in it, which we do. And we have a corporate circle account, and we basically stake it on a rolling 30 days. Today's contract is 4.2%. So instead of holding cash, which makes 45 basis points in an environment where inflation is 7.5%, at least we're making 4.2 rolling 30-day contracts on USDC, but not allowed to call it a money equivalent or a dollar equivalent yet. So when that becomes an equivalent, I would rather pay all of our operating costs and our employees. I've already asked them, would you take USDC? And they said, yes, because then I don't have to transfer. You know, I've got people working for me in different countries. And if everybody's saying they'll take USDC, why do I have to fuck around with local banks in, you know, Zurich and in Boston? And there's such a pain in the ass, excuse my French, but it's the last time I transferred money, I spent 18 minutes as some person read disclosures to me for 18 minutes from a transfer from the US to Canada. What a waste of time.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop. Really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. I want to go one or two steps further. Like, let's take Canada as an example. Trudeau, and this is not a political statement, but Trudeau seized the bank assets of some of the people involved in like this truckers protest, which I barely know anything about other than that. But it seems to me that things like that, and that particularly happens in many other countries with much more authoritarian regimes, someone goes into your bank account and takes your assets, the first thing you think of is, how can I move my assets into something that can't be taken? And it seems like that potentially is a use case for Bitcoin or other crypto.
Yeah, no, I get that, but that's not the big money. I mean, Trudeau's thing actually was only one account at the end of the day. I dug into that story and I actually asked the bank to close the account. And there was other reasons for it, but the brand damage he did to himself and the country was brutal. You're absolutely right. That was a huge mistake, but he does that quite often. Not that savvy at figuring out, you know, but I actually think, not to get political, we'll be swapping him out soon. So that's okay. But, you know, at the end of the day, the payment world, the FX market is multi-trillion every week. And so that's the one where you asked what the tipping point is. The tipping point is when my employees tell me they'll take USDC in every country. That to me is a whole game changer. I mean, and I'm happy to be compliant. Now, you're right. There's always going to be the rogue. I want to have some Bitcoin and decentralized wallet and my passphrases on a key somewhere. I get all that. I get it. But I'm in the institutional world where the demand for this stuff is ever increasing, waiting for policy.
So is it the demand for Bitcoin or for stable coins? Because in a world of stable coins, do you need Bitcoin as kind of like just a currency to transfer from one to another? Or what's the role of other?
Well, I had a conversation with the head of compliance at the FAB Bank this week. And also on that call was the head of compliance for BitBuy. And we talked to the bank for an hour. And what they said was their demand at their customer level is insatiable for Bitcoin, Ethereum, USDC, Polygon and Solana.
And why Bitcoin and Ethereum and Solana? And I'm asking not because I'm doubtful of those investments. I think they're great investments, but are they doing it just to invest because they think it's the future, or do they need those coins?
No. They're just doing it because their clients are asking for a 5% allocation in their investment accounts to crypto. And they only want to have, and they're only going to give governance to large market cap, highly liquid crypto assets. And those are the ones that they've chosen. So we, you know, we're talking to them as a service provider, and they're saying, look, you've got the Canadian order. We know you're compliant. Do you have the software to support the transaction for us? And we're saying, yes, we'll design it. This is the kind of conversation we're having with banks. And the only reason they'll take the call from us is we're compliant and we're operating under an order. They're not talking to anybody else because it has to be compliant within the framework of their government license. ADGM is the name of the governance there. And so, you know, we're planning on going global with this, and we're talking to lots of countries. Ben can elaborate on the other ones, but this, I'm talking as an investor. I'm not just interested in the Canadian market. I want more. I want to be the largest compliant exchange business in the world. That's what I'm investing for. I want every geography I can get from the compliance side. Now, that will, you know, that we won't be as big as Binance, but they're not compliant.
Right. No, but what I'm asking is, why do all these investors want it other than as an investment? So what is the demand outside of, hey, this is an asset class that's going to go up?
Well, it's guys like you telling people that they should have some money in crypto as just a diversified portfolio. And a lot of people are starting to believe that.
I know. So, but starting to believe that. So is it a perception thing, or is there a real world? You mentioned one real world use case as payment systems. And that's important. And again, there are the skeptics, like, is Bitcoin a valid currency? Is Bitcoin a valid store of value? But what's the tipping point where people see it as a store of value or as a currency? Like, why not use just stable coins?
I think when it gets regulated, like right now, Fidelity has got a whole bunch of people loading in Bitcoin into their 401ks in the US. They're allowing it.
I know, because people view it as an investment class that could go up. But I'm just trying to figure out, why do they want Bitcoin? You mentioned a world of stable coins. What do we need Bitcoin for? And that's what I'm curious about the answer.
You know, because they believe that Bitcoin is a long-term store of value. You either do or you don't. So I'm in the camp that says store of value, want to have some, want to go through the halving with that. You know, the whole thing is, I think this will be long-term, a very good investment that will keep pace or even better than the S&P 500. So if I can, in the long run, over 10 years, make an average of 9-10% a year, that would be great. So I'm just one guy. There's lots and lots of people. But, you know, just learning how to buy some Bitcoin, just learning how to get a centralized wallet or a decentralized one is so hard that it's not ready for prime time yet. So, you know, we've got to make it easier and easier and easier.
Now, let's take, for instance, Ethereum. So Ethereum is great as almost like a software platform for developing other crypto projects. But why do I, and again, I'm a big holder of Ethereum. I love Ethereum and many of the coins that have derived from it. But if I'm a skeptic, I'm asking, why do I really need this blockchain-based, decentralized focused software platform? Why can't I just use a centralized database and regular code to make the projects I want to make? Why do I need Ethereum?
Well, right now, Ethereum is still the number one way to pay. So it's gas. I don't particularly find it very attractive. It's too slow.
But it'll get faster after Ethereum 2.0, supposedly. Supposedly it's going
to
handle up to 100,000 transactions.
For 4 years. You know, I don't think yours is going to be Ethereum 2.0. I think that's the story du jour. Every year we hear about that. I think what will happen is one of the other projects will surpass it, or, you know, level two, like a Polygon, will become more useful because you can aggregate transactions. Who knows? That's my whole point. I mean, if you're an investor, you gotta invest in a bunch of projects. Bitcoin is not a coin, it's software. I keep telling everybody that. And so you might as well own, you know, Solana, Helium, Pollen, Serum. I mean, I own 32 positions because I have no idea which one's going to make it. But I don't need them all to make it. I need two or three of them, and I'll do very well. So that's sort of the investment thesis. No different than buying an ETF with 100 stocks in it. Same idea.
No, I agree, and particularly as it becomes more valid as an asset class. But in terms of valuing them, you're going to value, just like a company is valued on its real world use cases, not on whether it's going to go up or down. What real world use cases do you see coming up in the next 1, 2, 3 years where everyone's going to say, oh yeah, I'm so glad they made this. Just like, I'm so glad they made Amazon so that now I could buy things online and just have it delivered to my doorstep. What are the things that people are going to say about crypto, you know, 5 years from now in terms of that?
I think what will happen is the authentication of real world assets in jewelry and in watches and collectibles. I mean, I'm a very large watch collector. I'm working with a company in Switzerland to produce NFTs of all of my watches so that I can be selective in which ones I insure. So I'm going to save a lot of money in insurance by just simply telling Chubb, I want to self-insure all my watches except these 12 I'm traveling with. Here's the NFT on the 12 to authenticate them. Here's the cities they're going to be in. Quote me by the day. So Adresta is doing that out of Zurich, and they have the Chubb link already. It's all, you know, it's all chain-based. And I'm going to pay them to transfer the images and all the papers and everything into the NFTs. I want to do that because I'm going to save a ton of money. And plus, it's kind of cool to show everybody your watch collection on your phone in 3D and, you know, really high resolution rendering. So that's a real use case. And so the same for jewelry. Once my wife saw that, she said, I want all my jewelry that way too. So, I mean, all of this stuff is coming. It's all chain-based. And
you know, why do I need it to be chain-based? Like, why can't I just use a centralized database and say, look, this is Google says this is valid, so it's valid?
Because there's no audit trail. I need to have a transparent audit trail that can be looked at by the insurer and the owner and the watch maker who's going to ask for a royalty to allow that brand to be put into a digital form. All of that. And you can't do that in a centralized database. And so, you know, there's a real use case. HBAR is being used by Boeing right now, supply chain management. It's a quasi, you know, half centralized, half decentralized chain. Deloitte's looking at it. I mean, look, there's so many case studies of opportunity here. And I'd say we're in the first inning. I mean, in the case of what Ben is doing, he's focused on providing to consumers and businesses. I just opened up, I don't know if you know this, Ben, I just opened up a institutional account with BitBuy and went through the whole thing. And I'm transferring, as we speak, some of my AVEX and Algo. And, you know, I'm going to consolidate so that PwC, which is very happy with this, is saying, can I get a statement from those guys each month? So there's a real use case. I'm using our own product because it's more compliant than these random wallets I have floating out all over the net. And I can now have the auditor look at the chain every month without, I don't give a shit. I'm happy that for them to see it. It costs me less money for them to do it this way. It's fine. So I'm every month it's getting better.
You know, what it seems like you guys are aiming towards with WonderFi is not only easy access to trading of crypto, but I personally am really excited about the tokenization of everything. So the aspect that everything could potentially be an asset class. So Ben, like, let's say you just graduated college and you tokenize 10% of your next 20 years of future earnings. So people could buy Bencoin and this helps you pay back your student loan debt, and the Bencoin rises and falls as your career prospects rise and fall. And then using a DeFi exchange, I could potentially trade that for other unusual or formal asset classes. So I see this as a potential tipping point once other things start to be tokenized and traded. Have you guys encountered that at all?
Yeah, I think the tokenization of assets is definitely one of the longer tail big potential areas for blockchain and for crypto, so to speak. So I think areas like real estate, like collectibles, like Kevin's talked about watches, those are sort of more tangible and understandable for people. And this all comes back to the same problem that you talked about right at the start of our conversation, which is around people being able to understand and grasp the ideas. So the more we've seen, you know, I've been in the crypto space for, you know, six years or so, and have definitely seen surges in more advanced ideas and really like some of these types of synthetic assets and they, while there's a lot of potential there, and I'm with you that there there's a lot of room for growth, I think it's still very difficult for people to kind of wrap their heads around some of those more advanced opportunities. So I think the more kind of concrete, tangible things like real estate collectibles, those are the reason why we're seeing tokenization of those assets be more successful than other things, is because they're, your average person can understand, okay, I can own one thousandth of this home, and you know, be able to provably show that that I own that on chain in something that's not that cannot be manipulated, and do that in a trustless way. So I think there's definitely opportunity for that. But I do I definitely think that the evolution is really adoption of Bitcoin and crypto assets first, that's going to really kind of get, like Kevin said, having people just be able to try, opening a wallet or opening an account and, buying a little bit of Bitcoin, selling it, really kind of seeing what that actually means and what that process looks like. That's sort of the, gateway for people to get into digital assets in a more, in a more kind of involved way.
I totally agree. And you guys are, I'm hoping you succeed in being the front window to all things crypto, because that's what it basically needs. I don't want to have 17 different wallets on all these weird exchanges with different regulatory issues. And, potentially another real world use case that gets into the common imagination is NFTs. And now, Kevin, you were talking about, collectibles and your watch collection and NFTs around that. But I always think of NFTs as maybe, it's not just a digital image or representing some collectible, but it provides access to something. So for instance, a ticket to a sports event could be an NFT. And then, when you're buying from a scalper, whether this is real or not real ticket, and the original issuer of the ticket, like a sports team, could make royalties on every secondary, tertiary sale. Where do you see NFTs coming in other than as digital collectibles? Like, do you see that rising up as a potential tipping point?
I think what's needed with NFTs that have utility is a ruling on whether they're commodities or securities, because right now, the most exchanges like FTX won't do them unless the regulator, if you have an NFT and it pays you a royalty, that sounds like a dividend to me. If it's an ape, I get it, that's fine. That's just a piece of digital art. That's a commodity for sure. But that debate is ongoing and is being contemplated in the policy being, put forward. And I don't think we're going to get it till after the midterms, but it's discussed in the Lummis bill. And she's proposing that they are commodities, which is a good ruling if that happens. But you got to have the ruling. So I don't see NFTs really getting big. Most of the people screwing around with that stuff are doing it on a rogue basis. And I don't think any companies will be doing NFT tickets until they get a ruling on it. I'm not the big guys, like Live Nation or something. They won't do that. So everybody's waiting for compliance and policy and the potential. Meanwhile, the technology is getting advanced. It gets better and better each quarter. Better ideas come out. Mutable Holdings has just launched their NFT.com site. And I think they've got $6 million in the first day from all of these corporations that wanted to license NFT / Nike, / Procter & Gamble, that kind of thing. So they're just getting the infrastructure set up.
And again, it reminds me of the internet. Like, nobody was really sure in the 90s how, for instance, e-commerce sales were going to be taxed. And once the regulations subside, were fixed on that, e-commerce, of course, exploded. And what do you see as a timeline for this tipping point to happen?
I think 36 months, 3 years. It's not going away. The executive order out of the president's office says, okay, crypto's here to stay. Let's start putting policy on it. So we're in the beginning. So it's a really good time to be an investor. That's the way I look at it.
You know, and the other use case is, again, a lot of countries where the citizens don't trust their own currency, not only do they need a store of value, they can't use gold. It's not like you can transport gold from Argentina to, you know, some other country.
I don't think the gold market goes away. It just gets supplemented with crypto, you know. And I happen to think Bitcoin will always be the granddaddy coin, and there's a lot of institutional interest in it as soon as it gets regulated. And the way you know it's regulated is when the U.S. allows the first spot priced ETF, which Canada already has. So you can buy, you know, an equity. You can buy a Bitcoin ETF. You can buy Ethereum ETF. It's same thing will happen in the U.S.
And with WonderFi, which, by the way, is public on various exchanges, public in Canada, right? What's the exchange in Canada it's public on?
The NEO. The NEO exchange, which is in a transaction with the CBOE. So it'll be it's a very liquid market.
Your goal essentially is to provide this platform where it really is one-stop shopping. I could buy my crypto. Yeah. I could create my NFTs or buy my NFTs. I have this window into the world, and I could trust it. It's not going to just disappear or collapse.
Oh, it's more than that. It's one-stop compliant shopping. So, you know, that's why I'm moving my AVAX and Algo into my BitBuy wallet, so that I can be compliant with my auditor. Because each month it was such a pain in the ass. These are, you know, disparate, separate wallets out there. It was just a hassle. Total hassle.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning architectural shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in store and on Menards.com, and check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money at
Menards. Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You guys are also doing stuff with gaming. What are you doing with gaming?
So Sam Bankman-Fried, who's the founder CEO of FTX, is a investor and an advisor to the company. And one of the things that Sam has really focused on and been outspoken about is bringing people into digital assets. There's really a couple of major on-ramps. One, the biggest one to date has been trading, which is, you know, that's what our business is. That's what FTX's business is. It's people coming in to buy and sell crypto. And the second one, which he sees as potentially bringing in the next billion users into crypto, is play-to-earn gaming. So that's targeting people that aren't looking to trade, but they can earn digital assets through playing games that they love and enjoy. And it's what that brings is a lower customer acquisition cost for those users. And it allows us to give the users the ability to claim rewards that they earn, NFTs or other digital assets, through their wallets. So through a WonderFi wallet, through a BitBuy wallet. And then that's sort of a very smooth segue into trading and other products. So it's really the gaming side is focusing on high quality games that we can use to on ramp more and more people into digital assets. And the whole ecosystem, you can look at trading in a silo, but it really ties in with all of these other evolving parts of the digital asset landscape. And so our view is the more we can create this simple, unified access to everything that people are focused on within the space, you know, the more users we're going to be able to retain, the better experience we're going to be able to provide. And that's really kind of the thesis behind this.
And the purpose of using crypto and play to earn gaming, why don't people just use dollars? Why don't they earn dollars in play to earn gaming? Is it because they want to transfer digital assets from maybe one game to another, so it's interoperable?
Yeah, interoperability is a big one. There's going back to payments, it can be pretty inefficient for people to be using dollars in gaming versus digital assets. There's a bunch of advantages just from a efficiency, cost, transparency standpoint, so that if a company goes under, for example, you don't lose all of your assets. They're, you know, verifiable and you can own and control those assets. So I think that autonomy is really important, especially for people in the gaming world. And interoperability, like you said, is a key one. So you can, for example, you know, one of the things that we're doing is partnering with a couple of providers that have these really vast metaverses. So you can earn assets within a WonderFi game, like, for example, a Kevin O'Leary character. And then you're able to actually go and take that NFT character and take it into more of a metaverse game or opportunity and roam around and then go and play different games with it. So the interoperability is really interesting because it then expands the utility of for somebody outside of just that sole game.
And so will you be operating some games or just kind of providing the payment system so the currencies can go back and forth between the games?
We're doing a little bit of both. So definitely the focus is around being the access point, sort of the picks and shovels that goes back to our exchange business and providing the wallets. There are some good opportunities for building games and also acquiring existing games that don't have the NFT and play to earn component. So that's kind of our launch of WonderFi Interactive is with a game that we're acquiring, which is called Godzilla versus King Kong, and it's based on the IP from Legendary Films, and it's actually a really fun game. It's in the Apple and Android stores, and you just basically go around smash buildings, and your character grows bigger, and then you get to earn different new characters or pieces of equipment or things like that, and then when you do, you can claim them through your WonderFi wallet. So it's a great asset. It's a very high quality game. And it's also something that's really repeatable. So we can do that with all kinds of different IP.
When do you think I'll be able to like log into my Chase bank account and maybe see a white label WonderFi in there to manage all my crypto assets? I just want to deal with Chase.
I think it could be within the next 18 to 24 months. And I say that because there's a lot of banks that are looking very closely at digital assets and are, with us having these first licenses for crypto exchanges, we're getting a lot of, you know, interest, and banks really want to explore what they can do to really key demographic of Gen Z and millennials that care about digital assets, right? They're looking at money differently than sort of their elders. The bank knows this is a key demographic, so they're trying to stay ahead of things. So I've had conversations with major, you know, banks in the US and in Canada, how can they offer a stablecoin that generates interest for their customers without really saying, hey, this is DeFi or this is a stablecoin or whatever, just making it really simple. Hey, this is a high yield savings account. And then in the background, you've got a stablecoin that's being lent out or things like that. So banks are actively looking at that. And I think the quicker we can get more comfort around regulation, and the more time you have as a regulated exchange, because part of the bank's risk profile is they want to be able to see somebody's accountable, risk profile is acceptable, but they also want to see that there's time that's elapsed, so nothing bad has happened. And so you need a bit of lead time, but I could see in the next 18 to 24 months for sure something like that happening.
I think WonderFi sounds great. So where can people find out more about WonderFi? Where can they invest in it? How do they learn more?
So our website is wonder.fi, and that has information about the WonderFi app, BitBuy. We've got an investor relations section. As you mentioned, we're publicly traded. So there's all of our investor deck and financials and things like that there. And that's the best place to go to learn more about the company. And we've got a lot of great content online for people wanting to learn more about crypto, sort of get educated and really just kind of look to dip their toes in the water. So I think that's probably the best starting point for people.
Excellent. Well, all right, you guys, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. And I really hope, and it sounds like you're succeeding in your mission, which is going to definitely bring ease of use to hopefully hundreds of millions of users, which is, I believe, is the most important part of this tipping point that's going to happen.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, James. Great conversation.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.